What's up, Tierists? This episode of Tier Time is brought to you by Yard Force. As you all know, when playing golf, you need to get to the point where your swing is automatic. If you start to think too much, then you've already lost. Luckily, when it comes to outdoor power equipment, Yard Force keeps you in the zone with power and control. They've taken out the trouble of overcomplicating your yard work to making it easier to get your products done faster and with more efficiency. You like to be in control on the course? Well, Yard Force designs every one of their products with complete control and balance in mind. The new YF48 VRX RER battery-powered riding mower is insane. Did you ever imagine that you could cut 1.5 acres of grass without stopping on a battery-powered mower? Don't think so. It is loaded with cool features including push-button direction control, cruise control, USB power ports, and an LED headlight. The twin blade 38-inch deck includes the Yard Force Vortex cutting system for fast and efficient cutting. Tomorrow is here now. Time to step up to clean and efficient battery power on your riding mower. Yard Force products can be found online and at most home improvement retailers. Check them out at www.yardforceusa.com. Yard Force, yard work made easy, son.
And this is Will Wilcox.
There you go. There you go.
Jim Renner on the 15th hole, his third shot, you bet.
Well, all right. Here we go, y'all. This is another episode of Tier Time. Very excited to be joined by one of my favorite golfers of all time, Boo Weekly. So, Boo, thank you so much for coming on here and having a chat.
Thank you, Willie. I'm glad I get the opportunity to do it, buddy.
Heck yeah. I noticed your name on the boards last year a little bit. It looked like you were, you know, starting to play some golf again. Like, well, you know, how's everything feeling? You feeling healthy?
I was feeling healthy. I played seven events or eight events last year. And I just trying to get back in the swing of things, man. I had a new hip put in, a shoulder and an elbow surgery, and it's been kind of a last 3 years been kind of a whirlwind.
It has. I mean, you know, you really made hay in those late 2000s, and you won Colonial in 13. I mean, you really killed it there for a while, so at least you got some nice breathing room, but I'm sure it's feeling good to actually have a golf club in your hands again.
Yeah, man, it was fun because, like I said, I was off for almost 3 years, and I didn't pick a golf club up for two. And we're about a year and a half, almost 2 years. I didn't pick a golf club up. And it felt like my body wanted to go back and start playing, and people don't understand how much it takes, dedication it takes to stand there and pound golf balls. You're there by yourself. You got to work on chipping by yourself and putting by yourself. Well, at least where I'm at, because I don't have a whole lot of, I don't have a lot of tour players that live around here except Joe Durant. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Bubba, he's always gone over. He's over somewhere in Pensacola doing his own thing. But to be able to go out and practice, and do it, you got to be rededicated and trying to get back into the motions. And my body don't respond like it used to when I was younger. And arthritis is kicked up. Your fingers are pointing in different directions and hurting more.
Oh yeah. It's like the arthritis. I got into a little car accident, so it seems like my hands, they're just, they take a lot longer to loosen up every day. You know what I mean? It's just like everything's a little stiffer.
Oh, yeah. I can promise you that. I mean, I know you're a couple years younger than I am, but the older you get, the harder it gets, especially if you've had any kind of surgeries or wrecks or broke your fingers or, it's just time. I mean, you get older, things just breaks down easier.
Yeah. It sounds like you've been out in the field this last couple of days planting, getting ready for deer season. When does deer season crank up? I know up here it's, mid October. When's like the actual, rifle season start for y'all down there?
Apple season don't start till after the week of Thanksgiving when it starts for us here. And I know gun season comes in for y'all. Bow season's in right now. I got my stands. I went out and sat Oh, I went and sat the other day just looking. I didn't even take a bow with me or nothing. I just wanted to see. This is right here on my property, you know, and we ain't got, I live in Florida, of course, you know, we ain't got no real big deer around here, but I just wanted to see it and just, you know, think about a lot of things, man, because that's, you know, that's where I break down and get my mind right, being able to go and sit in the woods and just, you know, chill out and don't have my phone, or my phone with me, but I don't have my phone on me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't play with it. I just put it in my pocket and I leave it in my pocket. And
yeah.
And think about all the things that's happened, you know, that year or what I got planned coming up, you know, and I can talk to, you know, mentally talk to myself, and, you know, and kind of prepare myself for what my goals are and what I want to try to get done. That's what I love so much.
Yeah. I mean, that's always been your little sanctuary. And so hopefully this year, you know, with this rain coming up, everything will, you know, get growing for you so you can actually see some action out there. Do you sit in a deer stand or are you sitting in the truck, or where do you generally hang out at when you're out there in the field?
Well, I got lock arms I put up in the trees about 20 foot in the air. And then I got some climbers, and then I got shooting houses like my dad, you know, he's 73 or 70. He's 74. 73, 4. And he, you know, I built shooting houses for him to get in. So when it's cold, and I got little heaters in there so he can climb up in the huts, and I can drop him off in the mornings or in the afternoon and put him in the huts, and he'll sit up in the hut. My uncle hunts with me, and it's just us three that really hunts. My kids, they'll hunt every now and then when it ain't real cold. They don't like the cold.
Yeah, I hear you. It gets nippy in that panhandle, a lot colder than you'd think. So are you, I know you're born in Jay, Florida. Where are you at now? Are you in like Baghdad area? What part of the panhandle are you in?
No, I grew up in East Milton.
Milton, that's right.
Yeah, I live in Jay now up here in right outside of Brewton, Alabama.
Okay, cool. So you just right across the line?
Yeah, I'm probably, as a crow flies, probably 4 miles from the Alabama line.
Cool. Yeah, that's basically L.A., lower Alabama right there. I mean, you'll hit some of those little four-mans in the summer sometimes when you're rehabbing, won't you? Like, there's some pretty good little Calcuttas in that, you know, neck of the woods.
Yeah, we played in a bunch. I played in probably, I think, about 10 this past year.
Really?
All over Off, Elba, Troy, Laverne, Atmore,
Everman.
I mean, we played all over, man. Like, just, you know, and it's fun. You know, the thing is, it's like these guys, because I grew up doing it, you know, since I've been playing golf, and they know me, you know what I mean? And they, you know, and I'll make a deal. I mean, like, you know, I won't bring in another real good player. I'll bring in somebody that's like a 20 handicapper, you know what I mean? Like a buddy of mine. You know, and we'll get in the championship flight, you know, and sometimes, you know, I played with a guy that at that last chance when they had, and, you know, and they kind of stuck me, you know, they stuck me in a championship, and we shot 9 under, and, you know, we was in last place, and then we shot, I think, 7 under the next day, you know, and I mean, and we shouldn't even have been in championship. We should have been in like the third or fourth flight, you know?
Yeah, just got smoked. I mean, never. I mean, that's good. I mean, you know, it never looks great. People always ask me if I want to go play in them, and it's always a good player that asks me if I want to go play, and I'm like, you know, it doesn't really look that good if you roll up and take all the cheese, you know, because it is kind of like their majors, you know, and it's good that you don't, you know, just clean up in those things, because they get some pretty good money in those things.
Oh, yeah, they got some pretty good Calcuttas. I mean, you know, and I know that last chance when they do feel good. It was kind of like how my charity event was when I used to do mine. You know, we were getting close to about 300,000 in it. And then now, you know, I don't do my charity event no more, but I think they had a little more than that right there. They did one up in Auburn I was supposed to go to, and I didn't go. They ended up, and something else came about. I think I ended up going deep sea fishing or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I was supposed to go to that Auburn one too, and ended up playing in something. I was still kind of ripping it up. I think he was in May or June or something. And that Jacob Harper kid, he cleans up in those bad boys.
Yeah, Jacob's a good player, man. He's very impressive for a big young man. He can putt the ball excellent. Like, he's got some good hands. I played with him at Atmore four or five times, and actually, yeah, out more. And then I played with him in a couple other tournaments over the last, if I played with him probably 20 times. And that young man can play some golf. I just don't know what happens to him there in Q school. I mean, because he said he's been trying to go through Q school, and which I know you've been through Q school. I've been through Q school. It took me 5 years before I finally made it out on tour.
Yeah, and he's still young. He's only about 26, 27. And this year, he just had a bad first round. And then he ripped it up and ended up only missing by a shot. But, you know, he's still got time. As long as he doesn't get too wrapped up with that, you know, that Aniston and all those boys, you know, I mean, as long as he can, you know what I mean? It's fun to you know, cut up and stuff, but you can't cut up too much.
That's right. I know that same feeling, buddy. I was there. I've been hooked into some of that stuff with him.
Yeah. It's easy to, you know, go to those Calcutta parties and have too big of a time. But he seems always, he played in some event and shot like 56 or something. And people all freaking out. And then he flew out to Texas. And the next day, he didn't play too good in the first round and then play good after that. But he might have just been still feeling it after his victory down in the Auburn area. But anyhow, I played with him in some Emerald Coast, and man, he gets out of the way like crazy, and just, it's like he rolls the ball, stands up real tall, lets those arms hang, just use the wrists and just putt. I love when somebody uses a lot of hands when they're putting, and he does a lot of that.
Where he rolls it good. You gonna play anymore or you don't?
Well, I got in a car wreck about 2 months ago now, and it kind of banged my knuckle up. And honestly, I shouldn't have lived through the damn thing. It was this crazy wreck on Interstate 20 early in the morning. I started a water mitigation business with my buddy in Atlanta, and I was driving east early in the morning, and so the sun was right in our eyes. And there were four car accidents, bam, 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 and right next to each other. And a couple of people passed away. And so I was lucky that nothing happened to me. So I'm still kind of on the mend. I'm waiting to get surgery, but I'd like to. I got the bug back since I haven't played in a couple months. I'm gonna give it a run next year for sure. I'm gonna play in some Emerald Coast, just get my feet wet, see what happens. If I'm firing 67s and 66s, then absolutely. But if I don't feel if you're not hitting that little fairway finder and then the bomb and then, you know, finding the bottom of the chips, you know, feeling the bottom of the arc real good and nipping it, then, you know, I don't know. If I'm flying my 7-iron 180 plus, then that's another thing that I'm like, okay, this is good, because you got to be able to drop it in from the sky. So, you know, I'm going to feel it out. But I'm excited about what's coming up for you. Like, you're about to turn, I mean, sorry to bring it up, but I do know you're about to turn 50.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, man, I'm excited. I mean, I haven't played golf in the last 2 months. And I mean, like I said, I've been working around here. I've had a lot of problems down here and had health things that popped up on them. Blood sugar and some heart stuff I need to get checked out, and I finally got it all checked out, and I'm good to go now. So I'm gonna probably start back practicing and getting ready for, you know, this coming year. I want to go play Corn Ferry Tour and just try to get my feet wet again. And like you said, I'm gonna go play a few of the Emerald Coast Tour Genos down there around the house here, and trying to get, you know, ready just enough to go out back out on that Corn Ferry Tour and play. And just the whole thing is, man, it's like playing against these kids. I mean,
it's crazy.
Dude, it's unreal. Because, I mean, like, I go out and start practicing and playing, you know. And like I said, I ain't played in a year and a half. And when I saw you out there in South Carolina playing, and when I saw you for the first time in a long time, I wasn't hitting a 9-iron, but like 135 yards.
And yeah, I remember you telling me that.
You know, and it's crazy how your golf muscles, like if you stop playing for a while, your golf muscles don't want to work like they used to, you know. And then you got to rebuild them golf muscles back up. And I've gone to the gym and worked out, and, you know, riding a bike, building my legs back up. And it's amazing that none of that, like, it don't matter how much you work out or how much you do this or how much you do that. But if you don't work on the right golf, your golf muscles, you're like wasting time.
Yeah. And you can almost, you know, beat yourself up more. Like, I mean, if you do, like I said, if you're working out the wrong things and you can get too tight and, you know, you get out there and you can't get that flexibility right. So, yeah, I mean, when you're younger and I mean, I know when I was in my 20s, I mean, you did, all you had to do was just, it was just going to the range was just a blast because it was like, all right, I'm going to hit some cuts, some fades, some low ones, some high ones, and then we're going to go hit it. And then it gets to where you're thinking, well, where are my positions at? Do you ever get to thinking about where your, you know, takeaways going? Am I inside? Am I outside? And like you're, you know, do you look at your divot pattern or like, what are you really focusing on when you're about to start, you know, getting after it again?
My whole thing is just rhythm. I mean, my built around rhythm. I don't take it far enough back to, you know what I mean? I'm about a half, you know, I say half cocked guy anyway. You know what I'm saying? I don't get it all the way back. I've never been real flexible. So I've always been kind of a tight, you know, and I recognize the reason why I've always drove the ball real well because I stay so tight, you know, everything's all linked in together.
Yeah. And you miss that ball flight.
Till I really start hitting balls, you know, like I'll pound, like I was supposed to start pounding next week is when I'm supposed to start hitting balls again. And I just started some new medication to see if it's arthritis to kind of get my arthritis flare back down, knock it back down a little bit. But my hands have been, you know, a little out of whack. Can't open a pickle jar up. Can't even hardly twist the, you know, Coke can open or a Coke bottle open or a water bottle open. But supposed to go back and then we start hitting balls. I mean, I'll hit probably 100, 150 balls about the first every day for about a week. And then I'll go start, all right, then I'll go to 200 balls the next week. And I'll go to 250 balls the following week. Then I'll go to 300 balls. You know what I mean? I kind of build myself up because you got to build your stamina back up, your back muscles back up, your shoulder, my elbow. You know, everything's kind of got to start working together. You know, and I ain't really worried about how solid it is. It's just a repetition because everything else will start linking itself back together once you get to pounding them.
Yeah, muscle memory is everything. And I've been given a lot of lessons. And that's what I tell the kids that, you know, I was like, well, I mean, how often do you get to do it? And they're like, well, you know, after school, I get to play once, twice a week. I'm like, well, this game's all about repetition. So, you know, you got to think, you know, I mean, you can't force it. Like, you got to love the game, first of all. But, you know, the repetition and the muscle memory is the most important part. So do you get out there on the putting green and do drills like you do? Or do you just hit some straight in six footers and some long ones? Or, I mean, you don't seem like a guy that would, you know, have all kinds of, you know, gadgets and gizmos out there with you on the green.
Like when I go to practice putting, and it was funny because like, you know, like when I saw you, that was like my sixth tournament I played in, you know, this year. On the Corn Ferry Tour, and man, I mean, I can play at the house and ain't got no nerve problems, I ain't got no anxiety problems. And all of a sudden, when I teed it up in the first tournament, all of a sudden I'm playing and I got over a 2-footer and literally did not hit the hole.
Yeah.
And I got the yips, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden,
and those greens appear, too.
You know, and then all of a sudden I started like, then I got real nervous because I felt better over a 6-foot putt and I did a 2-foot or a 1-foot putt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden my anxiety got so bad. I had to come home and I called the tour up and I asked them, I said, hey man, what kind of anxiety medicine can I take?
Yeah.
I need something to help calm me down just enough to where I feel like, you know, I can hold on. Cause I mean, it literally felt like I was holding a rattlesnake, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got to where I was that week, especially cause I hadn't played in so long. And it was my first tournament back. It almost looked like the ground was kind of, you know, moving up and down away from me. And that it was weird. It was like vibrating. And that's just your brain playing tricks on you. But I don't know. I feel you there. It just feels like everything's kind of in slow motion. And it feels like there's a bunch of eyes on you when there really aren't, you know, I mean, just, I don't know. But as you get older, you just start thinking shit that's there that it really isn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. But like going back to like putting drills, I mean, I can go with like I was home practicing for, I went back out, you know, started playing. I go and get, I do a 3-foot circle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hit all the turns.
Yep, I hit all the turns. I do, you know, do pegs, and I'll do them, you know, until I get to where you got to make 10 in a row from, you know, all the way around it.
Yeah, that's a good simple one.
And I'll go to where I got a 5-footer, and it's a straight in putt, but I got to make 30 in a row.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I'll go to, then I do my speed drills where I go like every 6 foot, but I do it all the way. I do 5 pegs, which is 30 foot. You know what I mean? So then I'll go, and then I'll sit there and I'll put one of them alignment sticks exactly 2 foot, 2.5 foot behind the hole. And then I'll make a mark that's 10 inches in front of the hole. And then when I do that, then I can say, all right, I'm good. I got to get it inside this. And I got to get it inside that 10 inches, but I can't hit that stick that's, you know, 2.5 foot past the hole.
Yeah, yeah. They go back to the muscle memory. And are you like a tempo, a length of stroke, or what's your main thought on putting? Is it just kind of just let it go, just feel it, or are you thinking anything mechanical?
No, I think mostly just, you know, it's all about the speed, you know, which is going to be your feel, you know.
Yep.
And of course, you've been out on tour and you've been on a nationwide tour and you played in a bunch of the, you know, little cow fooder tournaments. And I mean, you get on like, you know, on the PGA tour, the greens are going to be firmer and faster.
Yeah. It's like a different sport out there, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a different game. It's a total different. It's a whole different mindset than anything that you'll ever play in. But, you know, you get on firmer, faster greens. Well, of course, when it's faster, you got to play more breaks.
Yep.
And then you just play more break, and you got to play the speed of the break. So now it's all about, all right, I'm a spot picker. Like, I like to pick a spot, you know, where I see the apex of the putt breaking it. That's where I want to stop. That's where I want to start my ball at, and then I want to end up over here. You know, I mean, putt break.
So you kind of see a line, like see a curve a little bit.
Yeah, I see curves. And I like playing pool. I mean, that's why I ain't gonna say I'm a real excellent pool player, but like I used to play a lot of pool and play a lot of pool with Jeff Champion, and you know he taught me a lot about when I actually played the mini tours with Jeff Champion. And when I was playing with Jeff, we played a lot of pool together out there. Well, he started teaching me more of like angles. And when he started teaching me the angles of pool, I started putting better. Cause it was like, all right, well, I see this angle here and I see where, you know, where it's actually going to fall at, where the actual turn is.
Yeah, it's like two different sections of the putt. Like, cause you know, it's turning one way here. And then that second half is going to be doing some other stuff. It's going to snake. Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. You got to kind of break that putt down into a few different sections, in my opinion, for sure.
Man, there ain't no different. You having a putt, you know, and you say you're 6 foot out, you know, and you say it's right lip. All right, well, if you're 6 foot out and it's a right lip putt, if you're 12 foot out, it's going to be almost a cup out.
Yep.
You got to add that other 3 foot of every 3 foot is a half inch or an inch.
Yeah, you know? It's like a new putt. Yep. For sure. And I didn't realize that. So that's interesting. That I know a lot of people that play pool well, generally, you know, roll the pill pretty good too. So you that really helped you with your alignment and thinking about the way the putts actually work.
Yeah, how everything breaks. Yeah, how everything just kind of fits into the geometry of the putt. In which, I mean, I'm not no good at no math, but I can sit there and like I can see it a lot better now. Yeah, you know, and of course you're gonna misread a lot of greens. I mean, that's part of golf in general.
Yeah.
But overall, if you go around there and you think about it, and like Jack Nicklaus said, you know, he hits a good putt every putt, you know. He just, I mean, it just didn't go in.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't gonna tell himself this or that, where I'm the opposite. I'm like, well, I just misread that. You know, I mean, that was just a bad read. Oh, well, I'm going to go about, which everybody's different of how they handle pressure and how they handle the situations, you know, and that's one good thing about it. I can always, my whole thing is it ain't life or death out there. I mean, yes, I want to play good, you know, very competitive, but I can come home and I can live off this dirt I got right here in my backyard. I can build a garden. I can kill an animal. I can steal an animal. I can catch a fish. I can, you know, hold a shovel good.
Amen. I mean, and that's a, it's a great, I mean, and you've always had that really good, you know, attitude about it and been life or death. It's like golf isn't live or die for you. So, which it is for a lot of guys. So, you know, I would assume a lot of your success has come from that. I mean, you've been able to close the, you know, close it out in three big ones in the Heritage twice. And then that just badass win at the your favorite golfer ever, Ben Hogan's tournament, the Colonial. That had to, that Colonial 2013 win must have, I mean, that had to have been, was that the sweetest win in your opinion? You know, having come after like a little drought.
Yeah, I had, but that's what was crazy is I had a labrum surgery that year before. I lost my card, you know what I mean? And I kind of got to where I played my way in because I still had the invites. And then I got to playing good after my surgery, and I got myself prepared, got it. And all of a sudden, I got in a tournament. And like I said, I just I went to Graphite Shafts 2 weeks prior to that, I think is what it was, or a week prior to that, because I was hurting so bad. You know, just the vibration, you know what I mean, coming through.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we, you know, changed some equipment up. And Scott Hamilton was like, look, dude, we played the week before that in the of Byron Nelson. And, I mean, I just left from his house over in Cartersville, Georgia, with Scott's. Yeah. And I was absolutely smoking it, like playing good. Didn't even, I mean, I'm talking about putting it good, everything. And I show up at the Byron Nelson, and I got snap hooks. You know, I mean, that's how, you know, that's how golf can change from day to day and week to week. That's why you got to let what happened in the past go, you know. And so, hell, we get over there and we play, and I've missed the cut. I mean, I just played bad. And we get to the Colonial, and Scott came in a day early, and I got there on Sunday. Me and him and Stephen Bowditch was out there hitting balls, and I was just struggling. Like, I can't figure out why I'm snap hooking it and this and that and the other. And he said, let's go get in this bunker over here. And we stood in this bunker, and I probably hit, I don't know, about 400 golf balls out of a bunker, you know, just standing there. And, you know, and if people
like
don't
iron shots.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about hitting a 7-iron, 8-iron.
Yeah.
Just out of the bunker. And all it was, all he was trying to do was getting me to quiet my legs down a little bit and quieten my upper body down. So it was two different motions that, you know, when you hit bunker shots, it ain't like standing on grass. You know, you got to be real still in that bunker. Your head can't bob down. You can't go swaying back, or you're going to hit it fat, or you're going to hit it thin. You know what I mean? And for us pros, you know, that's one of the easiest ways to get yourself back to where you feel more solid over a ball is you can get in a bunker. If you hit you a bunch of bunker shots, you'll figure it out fast with an iron. Especially like a 7-iron, 8-iron, you can stand there and you start hitting them balls, and all of a sudden you start clipping them good. You're like, oh, okay, now I know what I'm doing. And you go throw a couple out on some grass, and it's like, shapow. Like, oh, that there you
go. Yeah, and you were just spinning out. Was your lower half just kind of gone?
Yeah, well, I was either too lazy with my lower half, upper body was going too fast, and which would cause you to hit it way left. Like more because, you know, the club face would get there faster before your lower body would. So it means I would hit it thin and left. And then all of a sudden he said, all right, let's speed it up. So I sped my hips up. Now I started hitting it chunky and right. So then all I had to do was just sink it together. Once he got me kind of broke down of the mental side of it, he finally got me broke down in that bunker. And then it was like, okay. And then I started hitting it. And then we went out and played that week. And I mean, I played real good. I say I played decent the first day and a half, but the last 2 days of that tournament, I'm talking about if I'd have had somebody putting like Crenshaw or, you know, somebody like, I mean, Tiger, if he would have been putting, we'd have won that thing by about 15.
Yeah, yeah. And you won it by a shot. I forgot. I read it earlier who you beat, but I forgot who it was. You won it by one shot, didn't you?
Yo, over
Metrobase.
Yes, sir. And we was like, I mean, the thing is, we was like four groups or five groups ahead of them. You know what I mean? I was like, I think I was like 10th place or 12th place when I started. You know? And I mean, and it was like I said, I mean, I can, you know, I go through every shot lead. You know what I mean? I can remember, you know, about it because it was amazing for me to come back from injury with all the doubt that I've always had. You know, because, you know, you hear things about, you know, you come back from injury, you ain't going to, you know, you ain't going to be the same person. You ain't going to make the same swing. You know, you're going to have to change this. You're going to have to change that. And which that's the whole thing about golf, too, is, you know, you always got to, you got to make changes to better yourself, whether you like it or you don't, whether it's your chipping or your putting. You got to change stuff or, you know, you swing a little bit, you know, you got to take a little more upright or you got to take a little more around you. You're always making changes to what you got to do to make yourself better. And that week it was Scott. I had my hands down to Scott because he taught me something that I never knew that you could learn from just, you know, getting in a bunker and just hitting balls out of a bunker by just because it, you know, actually keeps you still. And at the same time, you can, you know, if you hit it right and you hit it chunky right, most likely that means that you're, low upper body ain't moving as fast as your lower body.
Yeah, definitely gets your sinking right. And I used to see guys do that all the time. One time I was out at TPC down Ponte Vedra, and I went and played 9 holes with my buddies. And BJ Singh's out there, and he's hitting 5 irons out of the bunker on the back of the range. We come back after 9 holes, and he's still hitting 5 irons out of the bunker on the back of the range. And I just thought that was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. I was like, what could you possibly be learning? And I was thinking I was playing with Matt Every, and he was like, he's working on his timing. You know, he's working on his upper body and his thinking. And I was like, oh, shit, I guess that makes sense. I mean, that's just kind of things you learn going along the ways. And that's cool that, you know, Scotty Hamilton, man, he had some great years there with you boys like Baudo and B. Todd and I mean, he got so many wins in those couple of years. And that's what those coaches do a lot of the times. They teach you some good drills. And you know, they don't want to mess with what you got because what you got is, you know, is world class. And so that's cool. That's how he got you synced up, is by hitting balls out of the trap.
Yep. I mean, it's crazy, you know. And then, you know, like, you know, you throw the Ryder Cup in there. You know, I mean, that's the best golf I've ever played in my entire life.
Yeah, I've just read that article, and that's something, man, I want to talk about that. Holy shit.
I mean, dude, I mean, I've shot 59 4 times in my life. I mean, I have. And I've shot it twice at my home golf course, shot it once up in Mississippi at my aunt's golf course, and shot it over here right down the road at Hidden Creek down here in Navarre Beach. And... dude, I mean, if I could have just kept playing at the Valhalla that last round of the Ryder Cup, I felt like I had it going on enough to where I would have shot at least a 59 or a 58 that day. You know,
That was the famous bull ride. And was your goal that day, if I hit the fairway on the first hole, I was going to ride it down the fairway like a bull?
Yeah, that was, I mean, I forgot all about it because I was talking to it was weird how it started because I was going to bed that night and I walked in there to get me a drink, a couple of waters out of our little player lounge on our floor. And I walked in there and there's 2 cops sitting there. Well, Happy Gilmore was on. And I just happened to walk in there and they were sitting there laughing, and I was talking with the cops, and all of a sudden, he went to ride in the golf club. I said, I'm going to do that going down the hole on the first hole. And they started laughing. I said, you ain't going to do that shit. And I said, if I can remember, I'm going to do that. If I can remember. Well, of course, we played a practice round, because it was like, I think that was like on a Tuesday Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever.
Oh, damn, you decided that early week.
That was early in the week. Well, of course, you know, we played the first day, me and JB do, and we played good, and we should have won that match. I hit it out of bounds on 18, which it hit the rock, and it really didn't go out of bounds, but it was where you couldn't play it. You know what I mean? It wasn't
this
very
par 5 with the weeds over on the left.
Yeah, going down the left side. Yeah, it wasn't worth a shit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I wouldn't. So I was trying to talk JB into hitting it, you know, just hit, because I mean, he was long, dude. He's the longest player I've ever played with until this Brandon Mathis. I played with him on the Corn Ferry last year, but JD was like 360, you know, and I mean, just flying it wherever he wanted to fly it to.
And, yeah, he decided how far he wanted to hit it on the John too.
Yeah, and so I was trying to talk him into hitting a 5-wood down there. He can hit his 5-wood and hit 5-wood on the green. You know, it wasn't nothing. And he was like, no, I'm going to hit driver. I'm going to hit me a driver down there. I'm going to hit 7-iron in. And I'm like, dude, I said, man, just, and you know, he hits a cut too. And he hit it down there where it rolls in the water. And he ends up making a 5. And I think Westwood made a birdie. And so we had the first match, you know, which I shouldn't have been out of pocket the way I look at it. Cause you know, that's just, I don't ever get out of pocket.
But yeah, you rarely miss them all. Yeah. Yeah.
But that day I did. And then, you know, next day we played and went on our way and we beat them, I think on like 2-1 and then, or 3-1, something like that. And then the last day, you know, I was standing there and of course we warmed up and I was working with a guy named Mike Taylor at the time, an MT, but I wasn't working with my golf. We were just working on chipping and putting.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, man, you know, he goes, hey, I think you just need to move the ball back a little bit more in your stance and your putting. It looks like you're kind of catching it more on the ups. Cause I was putting the ball good, but the ball was like rolling up there and just like coming just a little, like I wasn't hitting the ball solid on the putter.
Yeah. You know,
I was hitting the top, like I was catching it on the upstroke instead of the downstroke.
Yeah. Yeah.
But MT, Mike Taylor, he's from C Island, Georgia over there. And he kind of was like, you know, hey, man, you know, just do this. So I kind of moved it back a little bit. And sure enough, I started making, you know, started hitting the ball more solid, putting it wise. And then, so we go out there and we start playing. And as soon as I teed it up, I sat and I took my practice swing. Well, as soon as they announced my name, I happened just like it just clicked. I said, if I can get it over this little old corner of this tree here with a little old fade, I'm going to do the bull ride. And sure enough, I hit it and I saw when it took off, it went right over the corner of that tree and it was cutting just a little bit. And I said, oh, that's going to be good. That's going to be either right in the right edge of the fairway or it might, you know, hit and kind of just trickle into the right row.
But that ain't going
to be fun. And sure enough, I took off doing the bull ride and about run over the whole Fisher, the guy I was playing with.
Yeah, Oliver Fisher. You won 4-2. And I remember you made that was probably about a 30-footer. You hit, what, on like 14 or 15 to put it on ice? Well, you made a pretty good bomb on that, on those last four holes, didn't you? Because you won 4-2.
Yeah, I made a bomb on the so you can see. Yeah, I made a bomb on 14, that'll be 10, 11, 12. It was 12 I made the bomb on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I missed it, so it'll be 10, 11, 12. Yeah, 12 I made the bomb on. I missed it from like 6 foot on 10. I missed it from like 8 foot on 11. And then made it on 12. Made a good one coming down the hill there from about 25, 30 feet. And then miss it again from about 10 foot and then miss it from like 6 foot on the next hole and then miss it from like 8 foot. And then I made another bomb, or not a bomb, but about a 25, 30 footer on the 16 there.
Yeah, that was all she wrote. So that day, I mean, you just flushed it. And I know I remember them talking about how they cut a limb off number, I don't remember what hole it was, but there was one hole, there was a limb at about 310, and, you know, JB hits that little hold fade, and they went out there and cut a limb with a chainsaw. You remember anything about that? They cut a limb down for him on one of those holes in the back nine.
Yeah, no, it was on hole 15. They took a jig lift, like one of them buckets that's on the arm.
Yeah.
Raised that dude up there, and he cut. They took him down the fairway. He trimmed out probably, I say, close to about 15 to 12 limbs to where JD.
So he had a little avenue.
Yep. He started down there and he could hit that cut in there.
That is so wild. And just to make that whole JB, you know, JB accessible. Yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, hey, the course set up the way the home, you know, team wants it. And I mean, hey, that's within the rules. So screw it. Like, if you don't do it, might as well do it. And it's kind of crazy. And I mean, because it was a close match. I mean, the singles kind of decided that one, didn't it? It was pretty neck and neck.
Oh, it was
Or was it a landslide?
Yeah, it wasn't quite a landslide, but it was I think it was a five head difference, but when we went singles.
Yeah, which is it's not on ice, but it's pretty damn close.
I mean, because Anthony Kim blew Sergio out of the water. I blew out. Ben Curtis. No, it was JB, our number seven guy.
Yeah, who put it on that? Yeah.
Our number seven guy, when he shut the whole thing down.
Yeah, JB. Because when he hit the fairway on 15 or whatever hole it was, he said that they cut the trees down. That was, when he bombed that one up there at about 60 yards. I don't think he like flagged the wedge or anything, but yeah, he, that JB, shit, he just sends it. And the era you played in was just, you got to look back on it now. I'm sure at the time you were just kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm going on the PGA Tour. This is cool. Obviously, so you made it to the top. It was badass. But I mean, come on, like, was that not the coolest era ever to play in?
Dude, I got to play, I look at the guys on the senior tour right now, you look at everybody that's out there. Mark Talkovelka, you look at old Joe Duran, old Kelly, what's old Kelly's name that's out there playing right now? It's playing so good.
Jerry Kelly.
Duffy Waldorf. I got to play with all these guys. Guy Burris. Tom Pernice. Mark. Dude, you just name them, and I got to play with them, and all these guys. You look at everybody that's out there. They got anywhere between 15 wins.
Yeah.
I got to play with some of the coolest cats that you'll ever tee it up with on tour. They show up, they there to kick your ass and, good luck, buddy.
It was still pretty laid back. I know it was cutthroat, but like when I turned pro, right when I first turned pro, 2009 and 10, it was still pretty relaxed. But back when you were playing, it must have been, the camaraderie had to be pretty, a lot of guys you'd invite to the barbecue. Am I wrong there?
No, you're right. Everybody got along. Everybody, talking. If you didn't like somebody out there back then, you just didn't say nothing to it. But in our group, we play, on a Thursday and a Friday when we're threesomes. Everybody's talked. The caddies talk, the players talk, everybody talked. We all had something in common at that moment, like me and Steve Stricker. I played with Steve Stricker a bunch of times. And, we'd talk about deer hunt. We'd talk about, fishing and stuff like that, you throw Mark Kalkovec in there, he loves, that damn crazy ass Mark, that's something, he loves it all. He just did everything.
He loved bowling.
Yeah, he's the first one to come out with the claw.
Chris DeMarco.
We talk football. Now, it's like from that year of, I say about 2000 and like what you just say, about 2010 and on, it's like they're worried about themselves. They don't want to communicate with nobody. Like, we all go and eat dinner. Me and Joe Durant, we went and ate a dinner a bunch of times. I've ate dinner with Mark Kalkovecki. We've all, been somewhere and we went, to Roof Chris or, we might go to an ale house and have some beers and watch football. If we played morning on a Saturday, but it's totally different now. Everybody, it's like it's a job. Back then it was a job, but it was like a family job.
Yeah, it was like Hooters tour almost. The Hooters tour was so chilled out, and everybody was buddies. And now that I think it has a lot to do with the average age going way down. When you first made it, and I'm sure you look around back then and tell the average age that made it was like 28, 29, 30. Now the average age that makes it is like 24.
Yeah, because that's got a lot of it's got to do with the Q school of where it was like how it used to be. The old Q school was, you know, you go through first stage, second stage, and the finals, and if you made it, you know, top 30 in the finals, you automatically got your tour card.
Yeah.
You know, now it's different. You know, you got to go through, you go to the nationwide tour, which I believe is a good starting point. I mean, not nationwide, but I love the nationwide tour. I got to play the buy.com. I got to play, you know what I mean? I've qualified. Yeah. Like, I qualified for the Nike Tour, buy.com, and then the nationwide tour, and then now the Corn Ferry Tour.
Well, I didn't realize. So you played a Nike. Did Nike, I think that ended in 97, that sponsorship?
Yep, that was my first year turning pro. I Monday qualified for Past Christian tournament.
Nice. Yeah, that was in the during the DP days, right? Did you live in Atlanta at that time when the DP was popping?
Yeah, but that didn't happen until that would have been about 98 when I got on. I was playing nothing but the 97 when I turned pros in 97. I played nothing but Geno's event, the Emerald Coast Tour. I played it for probably two. I didn't join the DP Tour. I don't think he started. That was right when he started. Yeah, he started. It was a DP Tour, but it was in Birmingham. That was when him and Jack Slocum and I can't remember the other guy. I want to say his name was Gordon or whoever, somebody like that started it in Birmingham.
Huh. And did they play local events or was it more over in Georgia?
No, it was at first it was all in up in Birmingham. And they just played Vestavia. How you say it? Is it not Vestavia?
Vestavia.
Yeah. They did a lot of the tournaments up there. And then he brought it down to like the mobile going on there in Milton, but I had the senior tour event at, and then they moved it around and ended up in Georgia out at Lake Caroline. And then that was our home base was Lake Caroline. And I think that was around 2000, because I didn't get my tour card in 2002. It was my rookie year on tour. So I played 2 years out there. So it'd have been 2000 when I started on the DP tour. So I played 97. Is when I turned pro. Like I said, I won my first mini tour event, which Jack Slocum hosted it at the Moors. And he called me up. I was working out at Monsanto. I was a hydro blaster out there at Monsanto at the chemical plant down here. I done quit. I played on the weekend. I was a weekend warrior. You know, I just played on them Cal Cooters and all that stuff. But he invited me to come over and said, hey, man, we need some players to come and play. And I was like, all right. And he goes, but for you to set the money, you got to, you know, be a pro. And I was like, man, I ain't no goddamn pro. So we'll just fill out the form anyway. So I filled out the form and I turned, you know, just said I was a pro. And I go out there and play. I shoot 66, 66, 64. And I end up winning. I won $3,000. And I told him, literally after I won the tournament, he handed me the check. And I was like, here you go, here's your money. I was like, what's this for?
Woo.
Just won. I was like, well, I know I won, but I thought I was just going to get like a gift card or, you know what I mean? You know,
a clubhouse grant.
You know, you just get like a $100 gift card at the pro shop. And I was like, and he goes, you got to win $3,000. I said, man, I got to work almost 2 months to get $3,000.
That's wild. My first event was Alabama Open and they gave me something similar. And I was just like, I'm going to the beach. And, you know, this is the first time I could buy a $150 hotel room and be all right with it.
Yeah, I know that's what I mean. I'm right there with you. And I called my mom up. My mom was working at my daddy's drugstore. And I called him up. I said, hey, I think I found what I'm going to do with my life. And my mama said, what's that? She goes, where you at? And I called from the their actual house phone, like, you know, the golf course phone. I didn't cell phone. So I called from the golf course phone and I called mom, my daddy's drugstore, and I called him up. My mom answered the phone, and I was like, hey, I think I found what I want to do with my life. And she says, what are you talking about, son? We're busy right now. I said, well, I'm going to play golf, mom. She says, where are you at? And I said, I'm at the Moors, and I just won a mini tour event. And she goes, does your boss know? I said, yes, ma'am, he knows. He told me I could go do it. He gave me 3 days off. As long as I came in and did the shutdown the following weekend, or that the next day, I had to do the shutdown during the golf tournament. Now, I'm doing the shutdown during the golf tournament. So I would work at night and then get done, and I'd go about to play golf at when I get back. You know what I'm saying?
How long of a commute was that?
Huh?
How long of a commute was that? How long were you having to drive?
But no, it was only like 40 minutes, 30 minutes.
It's a little high. But yeah.
The moors right there. So I'd work at night. Like I'd go, like we'd get done playing. Like I did my first round that Monday. And we played on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday out there at the moors. So I did my practice round on Monday. Did what I wanted to do. I kind of played out there a bunch. So I kind of knew the golf course already. So then on Tuesday, I work all day Tuesday. So then I could sleep in and get up and go out to the golf course in the morning. So Wednesday morning, I went out to the golf course. I played, got done playing, went in there, took a shower in the locker room thing, put my work clothes on, went to work. I worked all the way to 5 o'clock the next morning. Went in there, took a shower, back in there thing, went, got back in my truck and took a nap.
Dear Time listeners, what's up? I'm excited to announce Jamie Lett as our newest sponsor. He is a Class A teaching pro at Cider Ridge Golf Club in Anniston, Alabama. He has recently developed a relationship with one of Canada's best instructors in Sean Clement. Sean started Wisdom Golf Academy and has a huge following on social media. His YouTube channel alone has 172,000 subscribers and has some very, very informative videos. As of late, Jamie has been featured because of his amazing ability to play the game, but also his deep knowledge of the game. These two dudes speak the same language and are building a nice following as a result. Wisdom in golf allows you to learn the skill and keep it for life. Helps you learn naturally, but most importantly, enhance the skills you already possess. They like to say, you're already Pinocchio, but without the strings. Human beings are good at reacting to external forces, but terrible at body positioning. Using their simple task, players can learn to evolve naturally. It's amazing how fast golfers improve in this game without the hornet's nest of swing thoughts. Jamie will help you learn how to overcome the challenges that come to you when you get closer to mastering a simple skill. Jamie says, let's enjoy the fun that golf is. Jamie's a great friend, great teacher. He's my teacher. Check him out. Jamie Lett. Stay dear. Check him out.
Dear Time, would like to give a shout out to our most recent sponsor, Brandon Tate State Farm in Lincoln, Alabama. Brandon is a local guy like myself from Pell City, Alabama, and opened his State Farm agency back in 2018. And since then, he's immersed himself in everything local. He truly knows what it means to be a good neighbor, and of course, he loves the occasional golfing outing. What insurance agent doesn't, to be honest? Now we know our podcast reaches people all over, but Brandon is here for our Alabama listeners. His office may be in Lincoln, but he has customers all over this great state. We're ecstatic here at Dear Time to have a local guy so eager to jump on board with the podcast. I just recently swapped my insurance over to Brandon and couldn't be happier with the level of customer service I've received, and what's probably the most important to us, saving money. Brandon Tate State Farm saved me a substantial amount of money and sparked a whole conversation about something I had never even thought about. He insured my golfing clubs. We've all handed our golf clubs over to the airlines before and thought, probably not going to see those again this time. I bet they're going to end up in Honolulu. Or the occasional thought of a club thief getting brave and taking my favorite 56-degree wedge. Don't you dare. Brandon showed me a policy that covers theft, storage damage, and so many other things for the clubs that I love so dearly. And I could not be more thankful. The best part, this was less than $10 a month for me. So be sure to reach out to Brandon's office and let him know Willie Wilcox sent you. You can find Brandon online at brandontate.net. by phone at 205-763-7023, or if you're local, just stop by his location in Lincoln, Alabama. Once again, that's Brandon Tate, local State Farm agent. Be sure to reach out. Stay dear.
What's up, Dear Time listeners? I'd like to take a second to talk about Piper Golf. They make deer quality golf balls, sorry, tour quality golf balls at amateur prices. Stop playing the wrong ball. You need to play a ball that fits your game. If you go to their website, www.piper.golf, you can take their quick quiz to find a ball that fits your game. They ask questions like, what's your handicap? What's your swing speed? How far does your 7-iron go? Be honest with them. There's a few more questions, but they got the gist of it. They got it down. They offer subscriptions at 15% off, so you never run out of balls. If you are a Deer Time listener, then go to piper.golf/deer, and you get some really nice discounts, and you're paying just over $20 for a dozen balls that are very high quality, and they're delivered straight to your door. Stop overpaying for golf balls, switch to Piper Golf, and stay deer. That is wild. So, a shutdown, is that? I mean, that means you're working until like 2-3 a.m. or those 24-hour plants?
That's a 24-hour plant. But what it is, they shut down one section of this plant. It's like a clean out. They had to clean it. It's what they do, Roundup.
I saw that's where that you did. You cleaned out the ammonia tank or whatever.
Cleaned out the tanks and stuff. We cleaned out that, like, that's what we were doing that week. Was they would float boats, they would float us down in them tanks. And we, you know, it takes, you'd be in a tank, and it usually takes you about 8 hours, 9 hours of sitting in a boat and, you know, spraying that thing out with a high pressure system.
Wow. And
that thing out. And then, like I said, I'd get up, go to the golf course, take a shower, get up, go play golf. And then, as soon as I got done, I'd go back, take a shower, drive back out to the plant. And the good thing about it is out there, and my foreman was awesome, and he understood what was going on. He understood golf, and he played a lot of golf, but he would let me sleep for about an extra 2 hours while I was out there working, and he'd hide me in his office, and I'd sleep in his office on the floor, or he had like a little cot, and I'd sleep on that cot for 2 hours, and then I'd get up, and I'd go to work, you know?
And that was directly after you went to Abraham Baldwin. So were you like 21 at the time?
Yeah, I was like 21. I graduated in 20. Yeah. So I graduated 92. I was like 19 when I graduated. So yeah, I went to school. So I've been about 21. Yes, sir.
Wow, that is wild. And so, I did a little bit of work, but I was in paper mills, and I know I wore coveralls head to toe, hard hat, the glasses, and then the little, I was in a bark bin though. So I was, laying this, composite on the inside of a steam plant, paper mill bark bin. So were you head to toe in all that gear? Cause that ammonia had to be pretty damn toxic.
Yeah, no, we wore oxygen tanks. I mean, we wear like some of the stuff when we hydroblasted, because that's what I mostly did was hydroblasting. You'd wear your regular clothes, and then you wear Kevlar, and then you wear rain gear, like the old yellow wetsuits, like, you know, slip suit.
Yeah, yeah.
You hard hat with your face shield, and if you got in that ammonia tank and stuff like that, you'd wear an actual mask, you know, went over your face so you could breathe, like a little oxygen tank thing, a little thing that you could breathe it.
For sure.
That was some good times, man. It was a lot of hard work, and, you know, it taught me a life lesson. You know, do I want to do this the rest of my life, or do I want to, you know, go chase something else? And the other opportunity, the good Lord blessed me. You know, I've always been a decent ball striker, and this and that and the other, even when I was in high school and college, and I knew college wasn't for me, but by no means, but I had to go at least give myself an opportunity to go play and try.
Yeah. And so you got yourself an undergraduate degree, or it was like a 2-year tech thing, or?
No, I went for a whole year to ABAC, Abraham Baldwin Agricultural College. I went one whole year and loved it. Don't get me wrong. I loved that whole little old place over there. That college was awesome. It was set up perfect for me, but
Was that in Andalusia or something? Or was that down in Florida?
No, that's in Tifton, Georgia.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Played golf there and, you know, played good. And I told Coach, Coach Moody, I said, man, Coach, I said, this just ain't, you know, school ain't for me, man. I got in some trouble and I was kind of a bad kid, you know, did some bad things. I shouldn't say stole or I got mixed in some bad stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, me too.
It's part of life. You know, you had to go through a learning spell and I went through some bad stuff over there and kind of got caught up with me. And I decided, you know, it's better for me to leave. So I packed up and I went home and I laid around in my daddy's yard for a little bit. And by that time, he gave me an ultimatum. He said, if you ain't gonna lay around my house and around here and eat my food and all that, you know, if you're gonna do that, you're gonna get your ass a job, son. I was like, yeah, yeah, whatever, Dad. And then I was still kind of running around doing some bad things. And next thing I know, he kind of gave me the ultimatum and kicked me out. And I kind of changed my ways real fast and got me a job and figured it out that I was on my own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so
reality hits.
Yeah, reality hits you. You know, when it hits you hard. You know, and it takes a man, or you know, to understand that, you know, you got responsibilities, and your responsibilities are this and that. I grabbed it by the horns and took off with it, and thank the good Lord, you know, He was on my side. He helped me out every way I could. Every time I prayed to Him, He answered my prayers, and one thing led to another, and you know, and I got out there, got me a good job. I mean, I wasn't making no money. I was making $6.25 an hour, but at least I had a place, you know, making money and had a vehicle and had a place. I lived down at my grandmama's house in an old trailer down there that didn't have no power, didn't have nothing. All I had was go buy some gas and crank that generator up. That's how I got my power, you know.
Would that cool the place off too?
Oh yeah, I had a little old, you know, a little insert, a little old window insert that I'd sleep on. I slept in the living room. That's where everything happened at, was in the living room. But my grandmama loved me enough, and she cooked dinner every night for my grandpa, and she invited me. I ate every night with my grandparents, and then I ate with my mom and dad when I was in town over there on their side of town. But yeah, it was interesting growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were, I mean, everybody always, you know, I mean, you're absolutely not like, people don't think Boo's like a John Daly type or something like that, but the way, the crew that you were, you know, kind of forced to run with on the DP tour, the Developmental Players Tour that Heath Slocum's dad started in the Atlanta area. I guess you said he started in Bama initially, but I mean, you know, you're a consummate professional. I mean, you know, you're able to resist temptation, it sounds like, a good bit of your life, because there were a lot of roads, a lot of crossroads that you came to that you took the right road instead of the wrong one. So, you know, like, were you faced with a lot of situations like that? Were you like, nah, buddies, I'm going to bed?
Oh, man, dude, you wouldn't believe. I mean, and you've been out there, you've seen it, you've heard it, you've done it. I mean, and I honestly say, if you're a PGA professional, you wasn't married, or even if you was married and you was young enough, you ran across the temptation of there's cocaine out there, there's marijuana, there's everything, every drug you wanted could be right there in your access to everything that you wanted. It didn't make a damn to what you was doing or how good you was playing or anything. The temptation was always there, or not, I shouldn't say the temptation was always there, the opportunity.
And yeah, it didn't take a lot of search.
Yeah, it didn't take a lot of searching, by no means, you know, and I mean, and certain, you know, certain things can hurt you, and certain things could, you know, actually break your whole career. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's there, and it's kind of like when you get to that certain spot, you know, I mean, and I've been in bad situations where, you know, I mean, I won't ever forget it. It'd been 2002. I happened to be at a bad place at the wrong time, and a drug deal went down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They raided the whole goddamn place where I just happened to be at this house party. Now, did I know the people that owned the house? No, I didn't. But I just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. You know what I mean? And, you know,
all it takes.
Luckily, I just happened to know some people that was with the tour. They understood, you know, I got hooked up right over here and this and that and the other, and one thing led to another, and, you know, I did a little community service. And, I mean, the thing is, I didn't have nothing in my system. I went and did a drug test to prove it at the time.
Oh, good, good.
You know what I mean? And I mean, it was, that was kind of like the eye-opener for me in 2002.
And you were full status PGA Tour.
Yeah, that was my rookie year. And then I got hurt that my rookie year. I broke my wrist or tore my wrist up. And I busted two of the knuckles, busted my right knuckle and my wrist up.
Yeah, that's what happened to me.
Yeah, hitting the shot at Torrey Pines off some roots. And but I played through it that year. Thank goodness my dad was a pharmacist, and I had a good doctor that understood, and they could shoot me up, you know, gave me some, you know what I mean, to get my, whatever you call that stuff, they give me
cortisone
and some other stuff, some pain pills, and, you know, I got hooked on some pain pills, and, you know, that didn't turn out too good, and then I got to where I couldn't play, and I lost my tour card, and got out on the Nationwide. That's when I went to the Nationwide Tour of 2003. And I finally got off the pain pills about the end of 2003.
Yeah, never looked back.
Kind of started my life all over again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Never looked back. But yeah, that's pretty wild. I didn't know about the story. Obviously, that and something that's going to be, you know, told a lot. That in the story that you want to be whatever. But hey, you made it through it, and you know, you learn more from a situation like that. We see your life flash for your damn eyes. You learn something from that, you know, more than you learn from, you know, damn near anything in life. It's just, you know, assess the situation before it could pop off. The odds of it popping off and something happening aren't very high, but that night it did. And, you know, you somebody's looking out for you, and, you know, everything turned out fine. But, I mean, after that, I'm sure you saw yourself in a similar scenario and thought, all right, time to go.
Yep. It was over with then. Like every time I got to where I knew that situation could occur, I got gone. Like, I told my caddy, hey, look, we're gone. Like, we out of here. You know, and you know who JoJo is, and, you know.
Yeah.
He's a good dude. He likes to drink. That's all he's ever done was drink.
Yep, you know? Yeah. He's a good man.
You know, and he took care of me a lot of times when I got messed up and got out of whack, and, you know, and he knew, you know, and in which he was kind of like, he wasn't my daddy, but he was kind of like, you know, close enough friend. He's like, man, look, dude, you're going down the wrong path right now, buddy. You know, he never gave up on me, and which I enjoyed that and I appreciated that. And, you know, and you know, we won two times together, and, you know, and then he had some girl issues that kind of came between us, and which, you know, that's just part of life, you know, and
that happens a lot.
Yeah, especially out there on tour, man, it happens a lot. A lot of shit happens out there, and even on the Nationwide Tour, it happens out there. You know, I mean, it just, or the Corn Ferry Tour, I should say. I mean, you just don't ever know who you're gonna run across, but you know, it's a good thing. You, like I said, it happened, and them days are over with for me. You know, I got me a good woman now. Got here in the house. I've been with her for 5 years, and, you know, my baby's mama, she kind of run me through the mill and kind of wanted her money and got what she wanted and got out of Dodge.
Yeah, I've been, not that I've had the success that you've had, but our lives are it's insane, the parallels. You know, young blonde lady that was a decade my junior. I was 20 or 31, she was 21, and we got together, and you just listen to those numbers and think, that's trouble. But I can just tell from, not that you post a lot on social media, but I think I follow your new better half, and y'all do look very, very happy. And so everything looks fine and dandy on that line. And I hope you can,
I hope you can find some success on the senior tour. You know, or, I mean, whether you do or you don't, everything's going to be fine. Like I said, it's not the end of the world, but man, it'd be cool to get out there and really, you know, have everything be healthy because you can clean up out there.
Oh, dude, I'm excited. I mean, like I said, I just got to get back into the, and you know what it's like, you know, when you take off this long period of time or you take off any period of time, you're behind the eight ball no matter what. Like,
yeah.
If you take a month off, it takes you 2 months to get back what you lost.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's how it is. That's how it is for me in golf. I mean, if I take off a month, it's going to take me 2 months to get back what I had before I took off.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
And so you know, I'm excited this year, like, to go out and play. You know, I'm going to get geared up for, you know, start the Corn Ferry, the Bermuda, the Bermuda Triangle down there, and we're going to get down there and get to play in it. You know, July, I turned 50 in July, and I mean,
July 26th,
23rd, I'll be ready to.
23rd.
So what's crazy is I'm not fully exempt.
Really?
What I understand is you got to have now, which the categories have changed over the years because of the money that Tiger has brought to us, you know, and Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus, and, you know, they've done such good things for the tour, and plus the tour on top of what they've done, you know, with our money is, you know, helping us and do the right thing with us. I mean, I don't agree with all the things that they've done, but, you know, a lot of the majority of everything the tour has done is they have looked after the players. You know, I mean, they might not have paid us as well as they should have, but, you know, that's a different scenario. But it's been a good ride. And like I said, I want to go out and play the senior tour now to finish out my whole career. But you got to have four wins, I think, or four. Got to have 4 points, or you got to have like $20 million now to be fully exempt out there. And I got $15 million on paper. You know?
Yeah, because a couple of years ago, it was like $14 million and whatever wins. Was it two?
It was 3 wins. In 2019, it was 3 wins and like $14 million.
Yeah. Now, in 2000 what?
I think that was 2019.
Yeah. That's bullshit. It's almost like they're looking at your career. No, I'm just kidding. But you know what I mean? It's just like, that's just barely over your deal. I mean, maybe you can get hot and cover that. But what is that basically like? You're going to get the first shuffle, or you're just going to get the smaller events, or how's that work?
I really don't know yet. I mean, I don't know. I haven't looked that far into it. I know I was hoping to go to Q school this year, and because they got Q school coming up for the senior tour, you know, I think it's in November, the end of November down in down in South Florida.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get in it. And that's one of the reasons why I just quit in golf now, because I was kind of like, well, shit, I ain't going to get in because they moved the date to, well, the date is June. If you're born before June of the 23rd or 25th or something like that, you can get in.
Oh, wow. So you're not even eligible.
So I'm not eligible for the first year qualifying school for the senior tour. So I'm going to have to wait till I'm 20, till I turn in July. And then I'll get, you know, maybe get a sponsor exemption, maybe get this, or maybe get, you know, and that's my whole key is, you know, I want to get some exemptions, get in there and at least see, you know, what's going on or how it goes. And
that 54 hole setup and it is sure, that sure is going to be nice, especially if you got a little arthritis or whatever.
Oh, yeah, well, the whole thing is, man, getting back out there and playing with these guys that, like I played, like I said, I played, you know, five or seven events out there on the Corn Ferry Tour. And dude, I was driving at like 275, 285. Off the tee, and which I know from, if you go back and look, and you can look up the stats, I averaged like 290 off the tee is what I averaged. But I'm only averaging like 285 to 275 off the tee when I played these last 7 events, you know, on the corner. Yeah. I'm looking at these kids are hitting at 300 and they're not even blinking an eye. They hitting three with that. One dude's hitting damn driving iron by me, a four iron by me, that Brandon Mathis. He hit a damn.
Jeez.
I mean, dude, he's the longest guy I ever seen hit a golf ball besides them long driving contest people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, you saw the thing that, you know, that 18th hole. Did you play in the Corn Ferry Finals?
No, I didn't. No. I didn't. No.
Did you see, you know, the 18th hole at Victoria National and down in South Indiana? Yeah, you played that. How about that 18th hole? You know the one I'm talking about. That little horseshoe boomerang around the water to the right. I mean, did you see that shot?
No, I did not. No, I did.
Okay, so that hole is, you had a laser, a two iron, and then have like a 175 shot in. You know, that's a well play hole, maybe an eight iron. You know, online with that green, it's like a 345 carry, maybe. So whatever, something along those lines. And he's two off the cut. And he's thinking, well, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and give it a run. I don't think the wind was blowing at all. But to cover it, whatever, the 10 was middle left. The dude hits it to 10 feet. He took it dead aim. And you need to just pull it up on, if you got Twitter or anything. It's like the shot of the year. He ends up actually missing the cut, but it was the most wild shot ever. I wish they had like a shot tracer on it. I think they do. But I mean, they freaked out. Everybody freaked out. I mean, to knock it on that green, he hit it to like 10 feet.
Oh, dude, I'm telling you, I watched, we played it. There's a par five. I hit drive on a par five, and it was firm and fast, that tournament. And it was in, I can't remember who it was. It was in Springfield, Illinois. Where it is.
Okay. Yeah. Under the one. I played it.
It's a perfect little golf course. I love that golf course. I mean, I didn't up real well there, but I played good. I hit the ball good there.
Yeah, it's some good par fours. You still got to shoot a million under, but it's some good holes.
That's exactly right. It's a putting contest there.
Yeah. But
he hit this dang driver on this, and we played backside first. You know, and you know, of course, 10 should be a par five, but it's a par four. Whatever.
Was it 16 that far dogleg left?
It dogleg right. It's 16. It's the only par five on the back.
Okay. So 16 is okay. 17 is that long par three. They may have flipped the nines. I don't know.
Yeah, no. Hard on the back because number 10 is used to, for the club, it's a par five. But for us, it's a four. Dollar legs a little left. Oh, you got to hit it over the edge of these trees. It's got a pond.
And then it goes over the pump.
Right. Yes. That's number 10.
Okay. Or is that number so you're talking about the hole that's the dog leg last up the hill and it's par five before the long par three, right?
No, this is a par five at dog leg right just a little bit. It goes two, it goes, yeah, 10 is a par four, 11 is a short par three, and then you got a little tight hole. And then you got another hole that goes, then you got the hole that kind of runs around the pond. And then you got it's a par five, it goes right. That's all I know. Because, I mean, he hit this drive there, because I hit a drive down there, and I can't remember the other boy I was playing with. He hit it like 10 yards in front of him. I was like, I told my cast, man, I hit that pretty good. He said, yeah. So we got down there, you know, and I mean, I'm standing there with a three wood. And I look, I said, well, where's Brandon at? He goes, he's somewhere down here on his right side, a little bit further up. Dude, he hit nine iron in there. Like,
is it a hard dog leg ride? And does it go uphill a little bit? Because there's not too many par fives on the course.
Yeah, it kind of goes uphill a little bit. Yes.
Yes. But it's a long hole. It's your normal person.
Yeah, it's like 600, I think it was 615 yards.
So he just took it over the fucking houses.
He took it right down. He took it right down the corner of the fairway on the left side or right side of the fairway where I'm hitting over at the left side of the fairway. He took it down the right side of the fairway and he hit drive over everything. I'm talking about over everything. And I mean, he was in between pitching wedge and nine iron. He just choked the nine iron because the pin was in the back. And I hit driver three wood and I hit it in the front bunker. I was like, nice. Like, dude,
yeah, I've played with him a good bit.
3-9.
Oh yeah. I mean, up at altitude, up in Colorado. I don't know if you played that event this year. Did you play Colorado?
No, I don't do good in altitude.
Yeah, it's a little funky. They play up in Loveland up there near Boulder, and so it's like it makes Mile High Stadium look like, you know, a child's play. Anyway, his ball speed was 208, and he was carrying it like 398. I don't think he ever broke the 400 mark, but when he that 770 par five, so you didn't play it, so you don't know, but the number 14 is a par five, and it's 776 yards, and he hit driver fucking four iron. And, you know, on that hole, I would hit driver ripped three wood. And if you didn't take the right line and took it a little too weak of a line, then you'd have four iron in. That's driver three wood. And so this dude, you know, I mean, it's just whatever. It hasn't translated yet into great scores on the PGA Tour. But he's a guy that he'll figure it out because he's got good hands, too. You know, he wedges it nice.
But my thing is like he needs to come play golf with like how our golf coach taught us how to play in high school. Like, you know, nobody, like I used to hit it way further than I did in high school than I do now, of course. You know, I'm young and I swung way harder at it back then. We didn't have a track, man. We didn't have all that, you know, it broke down every damn thing that you did, you know, of how the speed was and this and that and the other. But I know, like, I actually hit it, like, 30 to 40 yards further back when I was in high school than I do now. But my golf coach in high school taught us, he goes, hey, look, y'all going to qualify today. You can ask Heath Slocum this. Heath Slocum was there with us. He goes, y'all going to take a five iron, and you get a wedge and a putter. That's all you get to play golf with today.
Yeah.
Now, we qualify for a high school golf match. This is how we qualify for a high school golf match. You wouldn't even take your whole set of clubs. You just take a five iron and your wedge and your putter.
And our coach would do that, but we'd get every other club. We never did it like that. That's crazy.
No, dude. I mean, but the thing is he taught, like, same thing he taught Bubba. He taught Bubba how to, like, control, like, all right, if I'm going to hit a five iron off this tee, I'm going to hit a five iron, then I'm going to take it and punch it down to this number. Then I'm going to use my chipper. You know, I can use my wedge, my log wedge or my pitching wedge or whatever wedge I pick. You know, if you use a gap wedge, back then all we had was 60, 56, or your pitching wedge. You know, we didn't have all these.
And no gap.
We didn't have all these 52s, 54s. We didn't have that shit, you know, back when we was in high school. We're kids. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
Years old, you didn't know, you know, if you had a 52, it's like, why would you have a 52? You know, I carry a 50 now because now it's my middle wedge.
Yeah, Cleveland kind of broke the door down on that one, the 53.
Yep, they sure did. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying? He taught us how to, like, do course management. You know, and, like, I go out here with these kids now. You know, my stepson plays golf, and I just went and watched him in the Phoenix Springs for they were playing for going to districts. And, you know, and they went out and played, and, you know, in this little old school, we got, you know, I mean, I think his graduating class is only like 78 or 76 people in his graduating class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they ain't got a whole lot of golfers. You know, golf's not a big thing where we live here. It's either baseball or basketball.
Yeah. You
know, golf, like when me and Heath and Bubba was like Bubba was probably about the last branch of the big golf, because golf was big then in the 80s and the early 90s, you know, and then all of a sudden it's kind of gotten to where golf got it really too expensive to play down here where we live after they've shut three golf courses down here that I used to play all the time.
Yeah, you know? Same here, where I live. They used to be a couple in St. Clair County. Now there aren't any.
Right.
Except for that nine-holer, but, you know, that's just kind of a waste of time. But, golf, they overbuilt, and then they now put a bunch of houses.
Yep.
Man. How old's Boo? Bubba. How many years is he younger than you?
He's 7 years younger than I am.
Is he like a little bit older than you?
No, Heath is a couple months younger. He's I think six or five. Me and Heath graduated together from Milton.
Okay, I knew y'all were real close, but I didn't know who was the older one. He's the best.
Yeah, me and that Joker played. I can tell you right now, back in the day, I'm talking about back, I'd say about 2002 to 2009 or 10. I just say, I don't care who you are. Tiger Woods, I'm talking about Ernie Els, I'm talking about any of them. Freddie Couples, I'm talking about bring them on. They would, me and Heath would play any two people at any place they want to play at.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, I know
that. Y'all were the real deal.
Oh, dude, I'd hit it. Like, we can play alternate shot, true alternate shot, 3 days in a row. And I guarantee you, I'm talking about, come on, true alternate shot. There ain't no, there's not a duo back in the day. I don't care where we played at, where we were playing at, what we were doing, but you do the true alternate shot. I'm talking about he gets the odds, I get the evil, however it works. I'm telling you, I'd take me and that T-Bone, Heath, I'd play anybody with him. Anybody.
For him. Yeah. Y'all were a force to be reckoned with. I mean, when y'all played that World Cup, y'all just ran into a buzzsaw, but y'all came in second there.
Oh, we should have won that tournament hands. I watched my boy play. That's the worst I've ever seen Heath Slocum put the ball in my entire life.
Really?
I'm talking about the absolute worst that he's ever putted it in his entire life. You talking about that was one of the funnest trips I've ever been on because I tried to sneak JoJo in my caddy in as my lover. I had a visa for him because I was too damn cheap.
trying to get him in the hotel or where was that?
We was in Red China. We was in China. You know, we flew over to Hong Kong and all that. And we're playing at Mission Hills.
Yeah,
I was trying to sneak him in, like not sneak him in, like sneaking, but I mean, like trying to without having to buy all the visas and this, that, and the other, and you know what I mean. I wasn't actually illegal or nothing, but we were kind of, you know what I mean, trying to fib on some things.
Yeah.
And trying to sneak him in, and I was trying to sneak him in as my lover.
Without having to pay those $400 or $500 visas.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we got to a certain spot where we had to go through a check area. And, of course, they laser you to see if you got a temp or this and that and the other. And they get out, and they looked at his little old visa thing that he had, his passport, and this. And they looked at me, and we're standing there beside each other like we're together. And then one thing led to another, and they all of a sudden they said, "Well, y'all kiss."
Did they really?
Yeah. And we both kind of looked at each other, and he said, "No, man, I."
We'll draw the line. I swear that JoJo, man, it looks like he could have fought in the UFC back in the day. I can't imagine what a beast he was back, in y'all's early days.
Dude, he was a gentle giant. He was one of the nicest people you want to be around. And but until you got him mad, if you got him mad, it was a different story. I mean, yeah, I've seen him playing some bars up down here where we live at. He was, like I said, he was a gentle giant. That joker loved it. I mean, he never got out of line, never got out of hand, offed a lot of shit and trash, and loved the joke and all that, but he never, never was disrespectful to a woman or anything like that. But he, god dang, dude, if you ever got cross with him, it was on.
He was very loyal, dude.
Yes, he's very loyal. There wasn't no doubt about it.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite people ever. And he caddied for Renner, so I spent a ton of time around him. And man, he was like the mayor of the driving range. You know what I mean? Running up and down the range and talking to everybody.
That was him talking shit. Everybody.
He cracked me up. Well, I guess we'll close it out with, because I want to talk to you about these the heritage and what those emotions were like coming down the stretch, because I know you had that close call of Honda earlier that year. That was a wild finish. But we ain't got to talk about that. We'll talk about those two chip ends, how good it felt to finally break through. But you know, Heritage put up a great course. Did you have like a weapon Cleveland 2-iron that you were just melting it around there with? That was highboard days, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was highboard days. But now, I mean, now it was, it started all back, like you just say. I mean, it really started in Mexico. I started clicking in Mexico, and then we went to the Honda.
PGA, yeah.
Yep, and we got to play it at the Honda and was playing good. And my mom flew down, her and a couple other buddies, were doctor friends of my daddy. They flew down, and they surprised, you know, on 18, or actually on the whole 10 there, and you know, I was going around Honda, you know, and I got a one-shot lead and on 18 there, and I got like a 30-foot or whatever, and I left it, you know, 3 foot short, and JoJo says, left lip, blah, 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 and I hit it a little too firm, went through, and then tapped it in. My son come running out there like I won, you know, and I picked him up, and he said, congratulations, Daddy, congratulations, you won, you finally won. I know you've been working hard at it, you know, and he was probably 4 years old then.
Yeah, Thomas Park, TP.
Yep, TP. Yeah, he was like 4 years old. And I said, no, son, I didn't win. He goes, yeah, you did, Daddy, you won. I said, no, I didn't, son, I didn't win. He goes, your name's on first up there on the board.
Yeah, he's about to switch.
Yep, well, we go over there, you know, and we sign the board, and I come out, and of course, we do the press conference. You know, and of course, Parker runs back up and jumps in my arms, and I'm holding him. We're doing the press conference, and we're sitting there, and he goes, my daddy just won. And the guy's like, well, tell me what happened. I said, well, I thought the putt was a little faster. The wind was kind of blowing in and slowed the ball down, and la, la, la. I ended up three-putting. The guy said, well, how you feel? I said, well, I just choked. I mean, that's part of golf. I just choked. And my son's sitting there looking at me like, what do you mean you choked? Because, you know, he don't know nothing about what's going on, you know. And I'm
yeah, other than they flew down, they're all excited.
They were all excited, you know, because I was, you know, they're close in the lead. And I told him, I just choked. You know, that's just part of golf, man. You learn from your mistakes. And then the following week, you know, is right after the Honda was the Masters.
I didn't realize that's the way it went then.
Yeah, it was like the following. I think it was the following week was the Masters, and then we go to the Heritage. Well, this is where I got hooked up with Mike Taylor, Mr. MT, there in Sea Island, and I go over there, you know, and I'm just struggling with putting, you know, mentally. I was just struggling with putting, like my 3 foot putts going in. I mean, I was hitting the ball unreal.
Yes, you were.
And I mean, and I played with, you know, I played in the high board, but I had a 5-wood TaylorMade is what I carried.
Yeah, kind of a smaller headed one.
Yeah, the 2000 series or 200 series, excuse me. It was a 2-big. And so we're out there hitting balls, and then I go up there and I'm practice putting, and Lucas Glover walks over and I'm talking to Lucas, you know. He said, hey, you going to go fishing? There's some good fishing around here. And I was like, man, I don't even know where I'm staying at yet. I'm supposed to be staying at this house over here with, you know, such and such. And he goes, well, if you get done in time, if you want to go fishing, there's some good fishing around here. And I was like, okay, cool. So I go to the back of the house where I'm staying at, and I'm sitting upstairs, and Jimmy Johnson, my agent, and a couple other people, Brendan DeYoung and Brent Snedeker's there, and all of them were there. And I was like, hey, dude, where we staying? He goes, oh, you're staying upstairs. I was like, okay. So I go upstairs, and there's like a four single beds upstairs, and it's like a little loft.
Mm-hmm.
Put my clothes bag up there. I start getting stuff out, and I'm going to go get in the shower. Well, this guy walks up, and I didn't know who he was. And he introduces himself. He says, hey, what's your name? I said, I'm Boo Weekly, and this, that, and other. And I got to talking to him, you know, and one thing led another. He goes, I'm a putt instructor. You know, I like to chip and putt. And I teach people, you know, I'm a golf instructor. And I was like, okay, cool. And I said, well, maybe tomorrow you can look at some things on me and this and that and the other. And he goes, yeah, okay. So sure enough, we go around there and we're sitting there and we're talking, you know, and he's out with Lucas Glover. He works with Lucas and Jonathan Berg. You know what I mean? He's working with a lot of them.
Yeah.
Johnson and he was working with some of them guys on the chipping and putting. And I know Zach always used somebody else as an instructor, actually, your swing instructor. And so I catch him right there at the end, and he kind of comes over and he says, "How's it going?" I said, "Man, I'm just trying to figure out this." And he goes, "Well, show me," you know, so he showed me some tips. And I was moving my head real bad, so he put a dime back. And he said, "Put the ball on top of the dime." And I said, "Okay." So I hit the putt. He says, "What's the date on that dime?" I was like, "I can't see it." And he's like, "Okay." So I see what his philosophy was, is he, you know, he wanted me to try to read, to keep my head still. I just kept my head still trying to read what his heads or tails.
Hmm.
So then all of a sudden we started putting and practicing, and then, you know, he worked with me, and that's how he got hooked up with me in 2007. And I kept him along for, you know, chipping and putting mostly. And you know, and all of a sudden my chipping was a little off, and he showed me some things on my chipping. And then all of a sudden, 2007, I chip in on 17, and then I chip in on 18.
Yeah, and it was blowing about 1,000 on those last two holes, wasn't it?
Dude, on hole 17, they moved us all the way to that front tee box on 17. I'm talking about the very, very front at Hilton Head. And it's like 128 yards, I think, what it was, or 138 yards is what it played.
Yeah.
I hit a 7-iron.
Oh, wow. And it went long, right? You just hit it right through it?
Yeah, it went right through it, but it landed on the green. It just landed on just the – it landed because that pin was in the back less.
Yeah.
And it landed just, I mean, it landed just past pin high and just trickled off the back. And then, of course, you know, that downslope, it's like very severe, and it just rolled all the way down that downslope.
But you're still on the upslope, though, luckily, right? It's all upslope back there.
Up in the flat down there. I'm down there. Yeah. I was on
the straight downwind.
Yeah. It was straight into the wind.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It was straight, like, talking about, like, it was like a right, it was kind of like a, it was an in off the right wind.
Off the tee.
It was dead, like, you know what, the bleachers are usually set up on the right side. It was off the side there, but, you know, that bleachers usually, you know, where people can't tell really what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, and dude, I'm talking about, I just pierced it perfect, and I started at that right bunker, it's right of the green, and it blew it all the way across. And it landed, like I said, landed about pin high, and it rolled off the back. And then our JoJo said, "Look, this is, get this on the green. If you get it close and we make par, great. Let's just make bogey. Let's get the hell out of here. We'll make par in the next hole, and we'll just, you know, whatever happens. I mean, you know, you're tied right now." Or no, you got a one shot. I had a one shot lead is what it was. I was like, all right. So, you know, we chip it up there, and I flub it just a little bit, and it lands up on the hill, and it rolls back down to the bottom. And I walk up there, and JoJo says, "Look, we're still trying to get this up and down. It don't matter."
Yep, it's going to be fine.
I walk up there, and Zach Johnson, I was playing with Zach Johnson, and we were walking around the side there, and I look, and I said, "God dang, boy." And I told JoJo, and I got the video here at the house, and I took my, you know, my club, and I kind of like, "Man, if I land it right here, I think it's going to curve right in there." He says, "Well, hell, let's land it there. Do like MT said. Just, you know, all you're doing is trying to land it on that down. Land it on that down." And, dude, I landed it. I'm talking about it couldn't have been within, like, I'm eyeball level with the green. And it landed right where I wanted it to. And I'm telling you right now, it trickled right on in. I mean, it just, like, turned and just rolled right up in there. I said, "Oh, my."
Dead center. But that chip was kind of downwind, but I guess the second chip was a little better. I mean, like, you're kind of on an upslope at that point, right? Because then you have to do that kind of short, kind of stab it a little bit.
Yeah, I was kind of on the upslope there. The other one was kind of like more of like a flop.
Really hard chip.
Flop. I don't flop the ball. I'm more of a bump and runner. You know, down here, we grew up on greens that are, like, kind of flat, you know, around the greens. So you bump and run everything.
Yeah.
High in the air. And then, of course, then you go to 18. I hit 5-wood off the tee box. I mean, it was, like I said, it was kind of down and off the left there.
Mm-hmm.
I hit 5-wood down the right side, and I had, like, I think it was, like, one. Right. Well, actually, I had, like, 200. I think it was, like, 200 in. and I hit this four iron, and all I was trying to do was just hit like just a little cut four iron, and I was starting it over the marsh because the wind's off my left.
Yeah, pumping.
And pumping. So I'm just trying to hit, like, actually, what, the four iron? It was a dang six iron. I'm hitting this six iron. All I'm trying to do is just hit a cut six iron, but I'm starting it left of the green and cutting it back into the center of the green. Well, it got up there in the wind. I mean, it started where I wanted it, but it had a little more too much, like, cut on it. And it just rode the wind, and the wind has got, you know, once it gets that side wind going and the ball's cutting, it just slid it all the way to the right side. And I was a little bit past pin, and I landed it. I chipped it right where I thought I had to chip it, because back into the wind. And I figured the wind would eat it up, you know, in the air, but it didn't. It just I don't know, it's weird. It's like it hit like on a hard pin and just boom, took off. And it rolled all the way through the green. And I told JoJo, I walked over and was eyeballing. I said, JoJo, I said, this putt usually breaks less. He goes, yes. He says, but man, this goddamn wind's howling, boo. And I mean, this is like one of them chips that you know you can chip in. You know what I mean? Like, you're right on the fringe.
Yeah.
You know you can chip it in. And I sit there, and like I said, all right, I said, I'm just going to hit a little bump and runner right here. I'm going to land it about right here. I'm going to hit a left lip. I know this putt's supposed to break left, but maybe that wind will push it to the right. And, dude, as soon as I chipped it and it hit right there in that spot, I mean, I knew it was going in. Like, I mean, it was like, you know, your whole body feels it going in.
Oh, yeah. And then they say you won by two.
And I ended up winning by two. Ernie had to hold out on the last song, which he almost did.
Well.
Yep. And then the following year, we came back there, and I mean, I was on cruise control around that whole place that year.
Yeah, that was kind of more conventional. Yeah, you definitely had. I remember you made about a. They had that worm's eye view of you hitting a 6-footer on like 12 or something, and you're using like center shafted mallet, I think, maybe like a never compromise or something like that. I forgot where you were using.
That's it.
Yeah. I remember watching it, and you know, it was a dead straight 6-footer. I mean, dead straight. And they're like, this is the biggest putt of the day for Boo. And I mean, you hit that thing it would have gone in a thimble. And when you made that one, I was just kind of like, well, that's pretty much on ice. And sure enough, it was. So that was back to back. That's a big one, too.
Yeah, like we got around there because I didn't even look at the board. My whole thing was I never looked at the board. You know what I mean?
Even like your whole career?
No. I did my whole career off and on. But like just to see if I was in the lead or something, I never looked at the board.
Yeah, just trying to play good.
Catch up to the leaders, and I was playing good enough to catch up to the leaders, I'd look at the board. Well, the last four holes, I never looked at the board. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just finish it out.
Yeah, on the par five, so that'd be, was it? So 15, yeah, 15, I missed about a 6-footer. I was like, God, dog. Joseph says, you're fine, just keep rolling. And we're like three groups. Like, you know, I mean, we're three or four groups. Yeah, we were three groups. We were three groups ahead because Anthony Kim, when it was like blowing it out of the water, like Anthony Kim came out of nowhere on Saturday, shot like something stupid and had a lead. You know what I mean?
Yeah, as he does.
And Anthony, or, you know, Kutra was up there with him. And I can't remember somebody. There was a couple groups. There was, like I said, I was the third group front, or I was, yeah, the third group from the finishers. And we get around there to 16. I hit driver down there, right there by the oak tree, and I hit a little old punch 8-iron in there. I mean, perfect. Right up there, about 5 foot from the hole, lift it out. God, dog. Then on 17, I did the same thing. And then by this time, like I said, the final group is on 17.
Yeah.
You know, the group behind us was in the fairway on 18. Well, I hit driver down there, right down there by close to the water, and I hit a 7 or 6-iron back right corner because the pin was actually, take that back, I hit 7-iron a little long, and then I chip it up there, and I got like a damn, I don't know, about a 6-footer. And JoJo, and I'm standing there trying to line this thing up, and JoJo's just standing over with a flag, and I'm like, hey, dude, I said, you think this is left flip? He said, man, I don't know where it is. He said, it don't matter, boo.
Just, is that right?
He goes, just put it. I said, man, we got to make this the win the tournament. He said, look at that board over there. So I turned and looked at the board. I'm talking about I'm the last to put.
Yeah.
Boy, I got a 3-shot lead.
Well, that was it.
Dude, for real? He goes, yeah, man. He says, just lag it down there and tap it in.
Yeah, that's saying the old buck.
You know what I mean? I'm sitting here sweating a 6-footer trying to hope that I'm going to win this tournament, and he's already done another. He knows what's going on. I didn't have a damn clue.
He's about to unscrew the pin.
Yep, and Anthony Kim had the he had the birdie. He had about a 20-footer on 17 and missed it, and then, you know, then it was over with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's awesome. So how many back were you? Was it a pretty jammed up board on Sunday? Like, were you one or two back going into the finals?
I think I was like five back, because I shot 66, I think, that day, or 65. I might have shot 7-under that day. It's what it might have been. I think that's what it was. I think I shot last day. I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly how it went down.
But you lapped him.
I knew I called up to him in a hurry.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, at that point, I mean, you ranked, after that, you were 23rd in the world. I mean, that's wild. When I read that this morning, I mean, I knew you were top 50 player, top 30 player. But, I mean, the highest I ever got was about 100 in the world. I can't imagine what it was like, you know, getting pulled in all those different directions. Everybody want to talk to you and hang out with you and stuff. You know, that must have been pretty wild being ranked that high. I mean, did you like that, or was that a little much?
I never even paid attention to it. I mean, the only thing I knew the difference was when you got inside of top 50, you got invited to all the World Cups. You know, the play and all, not the World Cups, but all the
World Golf.
Golf, yeah, World Golf events, you know what I mean? And I mean, I enjoy golf, and I play golf to the fullest, and there's blessed me with everything I can imagine it's blessed me with. But I never took it as serious. I mean, I took it serious to go play, but to say, I want to be in the top 50 in the world for these many days or this many years, I never cared about it. You know what I mean? I just went and played golf. And, you know, next thing I know, I'm 23rd in the world. And, you know, I got invited to go do this. I got invited to go play this and got invited, you know, and then, which was awesome. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I'm just there playing golf. You know what I mean?
You didn't let it change you or anything like that. It definitely doesn't seem like you ever were a different person.
No, I can be a different person. I mean, reality is still reality. When you come home, I live in a small town, man. I mean, I live where there's only one red light.
Mm-hmm. You know,
there's nothing. I mean, I live in a small town. I play golf at a small place. I play, you know what I mean? I play with the same. I mean, I've been playing with these guys since I was in high school. I mean, here's 80 years old now. You know, they're playing from the pink tees up there, you know, where they used to use in the back with me. You know, when I was a kid, I played from the white tees when I was in high school, or, you know, when I started playing golf. And, you know, I was like, man, I can't play from the blue tees. That's a little too damn far. You know what I mean? When I first started playing, I had to play from the white tees. And now I'm playing from the back tees, and they're playing from the pink tees.
That's crazy. You never considered moving to Ponte Vedra or Jupiter or anything like that?
Man, the only reason why I'd move down there is for the bass fishing. I'm telling you, I mean, I've said it all along. My granddaddy I grew up with has always said it. The good Lord started right here where I live there. And I was like, how you figure that, Pops? And he goes, well, son, he gave you hunting. You can hunt deer, you can hunt squirrel, you can hunt rabbit, you can hunt anything you want to hunt. He said, you can go out and you can catch bass, you can catch crabs, you catch flounder, you catch redfish, you catch sharks, you catch tuna, you can catch y'all, everything you want right here. He said, within an hour, you can be catching and killing anything you want.
Yeah, you can definitely eat. Eat very, very well in that area.
That's it. I mean, and the thing is, I mean, to this day, I mean, I still live by them rules. I mean, I'm going to kill probably 10 deer this year. And then I'll have it all. I got my own cuber. I cube all my own deer meat up. I do my own, kill a couple hogs, and I do all my own hog stuff, you know, do my pork chops. I take it, get it cut up, but I take the hog fat and I mix it in with my deer meat and I make my own ground beef. You know, I mean, we do our own thing. You know what I mean? We got our own vegetables. I mean, we grow gardens. I mean, we got potatoes, we got corn, I just go buy a bigger deep freeze. You know, I go buy two deep. I got three deep freeze. You know, I put all my vegetables in one. I put all my deer meat and all my beef and stuff. My cows, I got cows. I mean, I just butchered a cow. I mean, I got all my stuff. I put it all over there. I don't have to go nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. If anything, you know, if the shit hits the fan, you know, like everybody's kind of saying it might, you're going to be just fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm be right here on my 460 acres, man, living it up.
Yep. Cool. And the deer, they're big enough down there to, you know, you get some good, you know, backstrap and all that down there. I mean, they're a little smaller than they are up where I'm from, right? Are they quite a bit smaller?
Yeah. I mean, I say our average deer down here probably weighs about 130. That's about And up there, they're probably about 150 to 175. I'd say from 130 to 150 down here, and up there, they're probably, because you're about 3 hours from here if you're right outside.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, cool. I appreciate you talking to me for this long. I hope you enjoyed it. And, you know, I think that was badass, man. It was awesome to listen to your story. And I hope you crush it this year. I know you're going to get some spots. You're too cool of a dude to not get some spots on that senior tour. You're going to be a big draw out there.
Will, you know, I always respect you. You know that.
I appreciate it.
Been down the same road. We've been on, we just different ages is all it is. And I appreciate you. I've been around you. We played a lot of golf together and I enjoy talking with you. You can call me anytime you want, whether it's on this phone or you can call me, you know, off the Zoom or whatever you want to do, man. You can call me anytime.
Well, I appreciate it.
I respect you, and you just, if you need anything, you call me and holler at me. I'm here. I'm the same in and day out. I ain't gonna change some shit. The good Lord blessed me to be who I am, and that's who I'm gonna be. So if you need me, you call me.
Well, you're a genuine, real dude, and that is awfully nice of you to say. And, you know, I always remember you saying that. So thank you so much, brother. And you know, enjoy your winter, and you know, just keep on being you, dude.
I will. When you see Jim Renner, you slap him for me, though.
I certainly will. I'll give him a backhand. He's up in Boston still chilling right now.
I figured that. But just look, if you see him, give him a hug for him. If you see him in person, give him a hug and say, that's some boo. And I miss him, too.
Oh, no, he's the best. He's the best. I certainly will. I'll relay that message.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Bye-bye.
See you. Well, all right. That was a very good episode talking to Mr. Boo Weekly. He's one of my favorite golfers of all time. Obviously, a awesome dude. Very rare breed for the professional golfer world. So anyways, hope y'all enjoyed another good episode of Tier Time. And everybody stay tier. Have a nice weekend. We'll talk to you. Tier out.